Chapter 8. Meditation. Watching ourselves practice stoicism. To help us advance our practice of stoicism, Seneca advises that we periodically meditate on the events of daily living. How we responded to these events, and how, in accordance with stoic principles, we should have responded to them. He attributes this technique to his teacher Sextius, who, at bedtime, would ask himself, "What ailment of yours have you cured today? What failing have you resisted? Where can you show improvement?" Seneca describes for his readers one of his own bedtime meditations and offers a list of the sorts of events he might reflect on, along with the conclusions he might draw regarding his response to these events. Seneca was too aggressive in admonishing someone. Consequently, rather than correcting the person, the admonition merely served to annoy him. His advice to himself, when contemplating whether to criticize someone, he should consider not only whether the criticism is valid, but also whether the person can stand to be criticized. He adds that the worse a man is, the less likely he is to accept constructive criticism. At a party, people made jokes at Seneca's expense, and rather than shrugging them off, he took them to heart. His advice to himself, keep away from low company. At a banquet, Seneca was not seated in the place of honor he thought he deserved. Consequently, he spent the banquet angry at those who planned the seating and envious of those who had better seats than he did. His assessment of his behavior? You lunatic, what difference does it make what part of the couch you put your weight on? He has heard that someone has spoken ill of his writing, and he starts treating this critic as an enemy. But then he starts thinking of all the people whose writing he himself has criticized. Would he want all of them to think of him as an enemy? Certainly not. Seneca's conclusion, if you are going to publish, you must be willing to tolerate criticism. On reading these and the other irritants Seneca lists, one is struck by how little human nature has changed in the past 2 millennia. The bedtime meditation Seneca is recommending is, of course, utterly unlike the meditations of, say, a Zen Buddhist. During his meditations, a Zen Buddhist might sit for hours with his mind as empty as he can make it. A Stoic's mind, in contrast, will be quite active during a bedtime meditation. He will think about the events of the day. Did someone disrupt his tranquility? Did he experience anger, envy, lust? Why did the day's events upset him? Is there something he could have done to avoid getting upset? Epictetus takes Seneca's bedtime meditation advice one step further. He suggests that as we go about our daily business, we should simultaneously play the roles of participant and spectator. We should, in other words, create within ourselves a Stoic observer who watches us and comments on our attempts to practice Stoicism. Along similar lines, Marcus advises us to examine each thing we do, determine our motives for doing it, and consider the value of whatever it was we were trying to accomplish. We should continually ask whether we are being governed by our reason or by something else. And when we determine that we are not being governed by our reason, we should ask what it is that governs us. Is it the soul of a child? A tyrant? A dumb ox? A wild beast? We should likewise be careful observers of the actions of other people. We can, after all, learn from their mistakes and their successes. Besides reflecting on the day's events, we can devote part of our meditations to going through a kind of mental checklist. Are we practicing the psychological techniques recommended by the Stoics? Do we, for example, periodically engage in negative visualization? Do we take time to distinguish between those things over which we have complete control, those things over which we have no control at all, and those things over which we have some but not complete control? Are we careful to internalize our goals? Have we refrained from dwelling on the past and instead focused our attention on the future? Have we consciously practiced acts of self-denial? We can also use our Stoic meditations as an opportunity to ask whether, in our daily affairs, we are following the advice offered by the Stoics. In Part 3 of this book, I describe this advice in detail. Something else we can do during our Stoic meditations is judge our progress as Stoics. There are several indicators by which we can measure this progress. For one thing, as Stoicism takes hold of us, we will notice that our relations with other people have changed. We will discover, says Epictetus, that our feelings aren't hurt when others tell us that we know nothing or that we are mindless fools about things external to us. We will shrug off their insults and slights. We will also shrug off any praise they might direct our way. Indeed, Epictetus thinks the admiration of other people is a negative barometer of our progress as Stoics. If people think you amount to something, distrust yourself. Other signs of progress, says Epictetus, are the following. We will stop blaming, censuring, and praising others. We will stop boasting about ourselves and how much we know. And we will blame ourselves, not external circumstances, when our desires are thwarted. And because we have gained a degree of mastery over our desires, we will find that we have fewer of them than we did before. We will find, Epictetus says, that our impulses toward everything are diminished. And, quite significantly, if we have made progress as a Stoic, we will come to regard ourselves not as a friend whose every desire must be satisfied, but as an enemy lying in wait. According to the Stoics, practicing Stoicism, besides affecting the thoughts and desires we have when awake, will affect our dream life. In particular, Zeno suggested that as we make progress in our practice, we will stop having dreams in which we take pleasure in disgraceful things. Another sign of progress in our practice of Stoicism is that our philosophy will consist of actions rather than the words. What matters most, says Epictetus, is not our ability to spout Stoic principles, but our ability to live in accordance with them. Thus, at a banquet, a Stoic novice might spend her time talking about what a philosophically enlightened individual should eat. A Stoic, further along in her practice, will simply eat that way. Similarly, a Stoic novice might boast of her simple lifestyle or of giving up wine in favor of water. A more advanced Stoic, having adopted a simple lifestyle and having given up wine in favor of water, will feel no need to comment on the fact. Indeed, Epictetus thinks that in our practice of Stoicism, we should be so inconspicuous that others don't label us Stoics, or even label us philosophers. The most important sign that we are making progress as Stoics, though, is a change in our emotional life. It isn't, as those ignorant of the true nature of Stoicism commonly believe, that we will stop experiencing emotion. We will instead find ourselves experiencing fewer negative emotions. We will also find that we are spending less time than we used to wishing things could be different, and more time enjoying things as they are. We will find, more generally, that we are experiencing a degree of tranquility that our life previously lacked. We might also discover, perhaps to our amazement, that our practice of Stoicism has made us susceptible to little outbursts of joy. We will, out of the blue, feel delighted to be the person we are, living the life we are living, in the universe we happen to inhabit. For the ultimate proof that we have made progress as Stoics, though, we will have to wait until we are faced with death. It is only then, says Seneca, that we will know whether our Stoicism has been genuine. When we measure our progress as Stoics, we might find that it is slower than we had hoped or expected. The Stoics, though, would be the first to admit that people can't perfect their Stoicism overnight. Indeed, even if we practice Stoicism all our life, we are unlikely to perfect it. There will always be room for improvement. Along these lines, Seneca tells us that his goal in practicing Stoicism is not to become a sage. Instead, he takes his progress to be adequate as long as, every day I reduce the number of my vices and blame my mistakes. The Stoics understood that they would encounter setbacks in their practice of Stoicism. Thus, Epictetus, after telling his students what they must do to practice Stoicism, went on to tell them what they should do when they failed to follow his advice. He expected, in other words, that novice Stoics would routinely backslide. Along similar lines, Marcus recommends that when our practice falls short of Stoic precepts, we should not become despondent and certainly should not give up our attempts to practice Stoicism. Instead, we should return to the attack and realize that if we can do the right thing, Stoically speaking, most of the time, we are doing pretty well for ourselves. Let me offer one last thought on making progress as a Stoic. Marcus spent his adult life practicing Stoicism, and even though he had a temperament well suited to it, he found that he would hit low points, during which his Stoicism seemed incapable of providing him the tranquility he sought. In the Meditations, he offers advice on what to do at such junctures. Continue to practice Stoicism, even when success looks hopeless.